Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Start the clock.
You, the one with that smile.
My name is Travis Bean.
My name's Chris Lambert.
And what's the order again? Who talks now?
You do.
Okay, I talk. Today we are, this is our inaugural episode of us going through our movie rankings. So on our site, filmcolossus.com, we do a lot of like nerdy movie explanations, which is going to be, we're going to put out an episode every other week where we break down a movie, but every other week we're going to do these episodes where we talk about just the movies we've seen recently, where they rank on our movie list that we keep on the site, and we're just going to talk about what we like or don't like about them.
Yeah, while the other ones will get a little bit more deep divey, nerdy, you'll get some of the analysis in here, as that's going to be part of the reason why we ranked something. But it's also, I think, a nice for discovery, nice for recommendations. If you're curious about a movie or might be hearing about a movie for the first time, it might give you cause to go watch it, either because we liked it so much or we hated it so much.
Yeah. So say like you hate every movie that I like, or you like every movie that I hate. If I hate a movie, you know what to do.
Absolutely.
I should have said we should. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It's just how it. That's how it is. We have one friend where he and I have completely opposite movie tastes. So if I like something, he tends to hate it. And if he hates something, I know that I'm probably going to really love it.
Yeah. But we should say at the top of the episode, by the way, we failed to do this so far. We say start the clock, but then we don't say how much time we actually have.
Oh,
so
yeah.
This episode, we have 30 minutes.
Yeah, down to 28.
Oh, gosh. Okay, Chris. So we're going based on the last time we put out an episode, which was December 21st. How many movies have you watched since December 21st?
I have only watched two movies. No, I've watched three movies in that time.
You've watched three?
I've watched three.
And you're going to talk about at least two of them?
Yeah.
Or that's the goal anyway. And I have watched 13 movies? That's almost a movie a day. That's pretty much a movie a day.
Are you good to talk about three of them?
Sure. Yeah, I'll try my best in the time allotted.
Okay. Perfect.
I mean, I can list out all the movies I've watched if we really want, but really I'm just going to pick out the three best ones, which I feel like it's just pick out the three newest releases.
Yeah, you should also be sure to note which one was the worst of the ones.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you that. I mean, that's one of the new releases that I think we'll talk about.
Okay, beautiful.
So who's going first? Me, you, what's up?
You start us off. What do you got?
All right. I will say, I'll save the one I really didn't care for, because I think that'll be an interesting discussion. I'll start with the one I really enjoyed. Not the best movie I watched since December 21st, but maybe the most... I don't know, Avatar: The Way of Water, which, okay. Chris, I mean, it's already detailed on this podcast. We're only three episodes deep, but we already have a mythology building about Avatar: The Way of Water. And you were begging me to go see this in the theaters, were you not?
I absolutely was, because it's just the same way that the first one was such a spectacle to the movie theaters in 2009. I feel like in the intervening 13 years, this new one has done the same thing with the technology where we're currently at. And it was just, what a thing to behold.
And my response to your encouragement to go to a movie theater, which is filled with people I don't want to be sitting near, who smell like things I don't want to smell, who are talking about things I'd rather not be hearing during a movie, for you to encourage me to go into that environment, which I have avoided for a while now, mostly because I had a child, and secondly, because I just got more and more sick of going to movie theaters. For me to go to a movie, it was a big deal for me, but I did it. I believed you. My wife and I, we made a day date out of it. Her parents watched our kid. And Chris, I have to thank you. You were right.
Always am.
I thought it was, I mean, yes, visually, of course, like it's worth the price of admission. It honestly made me feel a little, it made me not want to go to the movie theaters once again, because like I'm going to pay the same amount of money to go see something that's not nearly as impressive. Like that's what I really love about The Way of Water, is like you truly get your money's worth, like paying $15-16 to see it at IMAX 3D. That I say that's a hell of a deal. It's so spectacular and so different from, I mean, James Cameron invented technology for this movie. Like no movie, literally no movie looks like this. So it is truly something to behold.
Yeah. What and then story wise, did it do it for you narratively?
See, that was the part I didn't expect. Was, you know, I haven't seen Avatar since it came out. And my recollection of it is it's boring, formulaic, obvious. Unobtainium is the name. I mean, that's your clue right there about how obvious it is. And I was just kind of like, I don't need to see any more of these. But man, this movie made me think like I should probably go back and brush up on my Avatar. I was fully invested in the world James Cameron is building. I was so gripped by the stories, like every single character, all the connections between the characters. Like James Cameron, like I feel like he's always somebody I haven't been like super into, because his characters are always a little blockheaded, you know? Mm. Like they're very like over the top caricatures of like tropish characters you always see. And so I think I always have a little time like investing myself in them, hard time doing it, but I don't know what it is about The Way of Water, but like it was totally working. Like all of the stories were interesting enough and they connected in interesting enough ways that at every turn, no matter how kind of obvious or played out any of the storylines were, they were done well, they were acted well, the flow, the energy, like it all built to a climax in a perfect way. I cried several times. I just kept crying. And I was like, I think at this point, any movie about family makes me cry. So like,
yeah.
So yeah, it's just like everything it was doing was hitting the right notes.
The thing that like, I mentioned this, I think in the previous best of list or 2022 rankings, but the thoroughness, it's not something you and I got to discuss. The thoroughness of the storytelling is what got to me.
Yeah, right.
And just how patient the movie is in developing the characters, the sense of place, the arcs and the emotion. The scene that jumped out to me the most was the wailing scene. Mm. It was so detailed from start to finish, and that made it all the more painful to kind of witness how realistic it was. And the fact that it wasn't presented in this dramatized kind of blockbustery Hollywood way, but as very matter of fact, it just blew me away. Yeah. How masterful that was in terms of like awakening people to a very real issue that I think a lot of us feel with whaling in the current state of the world. But also in context of the movie, I just think about other movies that I've watched and how quick they seem to speed through and get to the next beats or get to the next plot point, that there was something really refreshing. Like, I don't want every movie to be 3 hours, but maybe some movies need to scale down some of the story that they're telling in order to develop in a meaningful way.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like that's an area you and I have always diverged a little bit, but I think after everything you've just said, maybe we agree more than we realize that, like, I don't necessarily... Thorough is an interesting word to use because, in my mind, a lot of movies falter and become just very boring because of how thorough they are. And, like, they want to, like, build out this world and they're showing me all this stuff that, like, doesn't matter and doesn't pertain to the story and doesn't advance the characters. I think the thing I've always appreciated more about movies is efficiency, which is, like, the least sexy thing you could say about a movie. But in my mind, it is, like, it's absolutely crucial for a movie to be efficient. In my mind, The Way of Water is very efficient with everything. Like, it packs so much in to its three-hour time. In the whale scene you're talking about, like, all of that, to me, is efficient storytelling. Like, everything we see there is absolutely crucial to the story, the characters, like, our emotional investment in what's going on. It doesn't, like, efficiency doesn't mean fast. It just means, like, you're doing the most with the time you have. And this movie is doing that. Like, it doesn't feel like 3 hours at all.
No, not even a little. Which, we are divided on the Harry Potter films, right? You like the back half very more much than the front half?
Well, the first two movies are my favorite.
Okay.
So, kind of. But the last two movies are my third and fourth favorites.
See, I go 4-3-2-1 as my, like, top four. And then I don't even know.
I love three, though. Three could be number five. This is a different episode.
But that kind of gets at, I always look at the Harry Potter franchise as, like, kind of a divide between
It is.
Thorough and efficient, where the first four movies are very thorough and the last four are very efficient.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, we're aligned on The Way of Water. We both love it.
Yes, yes, yes.
What do you got for me?
Where did you rank it? Where did it...
I guess, yeah, that's part of the show, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'll just go... I'll put it on my 2022 rankings. I still have to update it on the site. For the 2022 rankings, I mean, I think I'd rank it definitely top 10. Let me look at my list really quick. I'd go above Jurassic World. I'd probably go above Dog as well, which is an absurd sentence that so many people are laughing at. I think I'd put it at number 5.
Okay. What's it above?
So it would go, my list would go Vortex, Genius, Wheel of Fortune, Fantasy, X, then Avatar, then Dog, Jurassic World, Ambulance, RRR, Orphan First Kill.
Okay. Okay.
That's my top 10.
Okay. Awesome. Well,
oh, wait, I have another one I would add to that, actually. Ah, shit. But I'm not talking about that movie here.
Okay. Well, you'll have to tell us at the end.
Yeah. Okay. Ooh, cliffhanger.
The one that I'm trying to think what I ranked most highly. So recently I've watched Falling Down, Hereditary, and Banshees of Inisherin. Which one of those do you want to hear me talk about?
Well, let's talk about the Banshees of Inisherin, because that was going to be the other movie I was going to mention, but I don't have to if you talk about it.
Okay. Banshees was cool to me. I ended up ranking it, this is my all-time rankings. In the all-time rankings, which are currently, how many? 70? It ended up at number 9.
And that's just movies you've watched since we started the all-time rankings list.
We started ranking movies in July of 2022. So movies that we had watched prior to this didn't make the list. So it's only movies we've seen since starting it. So it's something like, you know, I've seen thousands of movies. Putting them all on the list, I feel like, is kind of cheating a little bit. So, like, some of my favorite movies aren't even on the list yet. So Banshees being at number 9 is just a byproduct of that. But it's in the oppressive category for me. Like, I thought it was doing... I thought the performances, specifically from Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, were, like, really good. That as much as Farrell's kind of the leading man of it, that Gleeson just had such a presence in the film that it was really fun to watch. I like what it's doing with the Irish Civil War and the fact that there's this subtext that it's essentially... a metaphor for the Civil War, with Colm, Brendan Gleeson being the Irish Free State and Colin Farrell as Padraic being the IRA, and what happened in the aftermath of the Irish like War of Independence that then led to the Irish Civil War. I think it's pretty fascinating to see an Irish filmmaker, an Irish cast really be commenting on their country's history in that way. And some of the ideas and topics we can draw from that, like Siobhan, Padraic's sister, ends up leaving Inisherin. And if you're viewing Inisherin as kind of Ireland, the idea of brain drain, like she's somebody that was smart, capable, had goals that she felt she couldn't make a life in the country as it currently was and went elsewhere. Makes a lot of sense, as I was reading that there were like hundreds of thousands of people that fled Ireland after that for the UK, for the United States. It was one of the precursors ahead of the like the potato famine that led to a bunch of people fleeing. And then even Barry Keoghan, I've never actually heard anybody say his last name. I need to I need to look that up, but his character representing kind of like the youth and their vision of their future and how bleak that future is, like limited prospects in career, in marriage, in friendship, and how much that can kind of weigh on you, I thought was also very like poignant and fascinating to see. So I liked the movie a lot. It was just something where I wanted a bit more from it. Like, we were just talking about scale with Avatar, and this is a thorough movie in that it's just like the breakdown of two friends' relationship and setting this new precedence for what the relationship is going to be moving forward, and it accomplished everything that I think it needed. It's just kind of at the end of it, I'm like, okay. It didn't. It didn't leave me with that next level of like, oh man, this is like hitting me in my existential like way, in the same way as something like X did when I saw X, or something like Prisoners or Triangle of Sadness. So in terms of like larger movies, it just doesn't quite have that next gear for me that I'm looking for, which is why it ends up in the oppressive category rather than amazing or colossal, which is the top ranked category for me.
Yeah. I'm going to respond to that. I'm going to back up really quick and say on my all-time list, I have Avatar: The Way of Water. Actually, I'm looking at it more. I might put it above X, which I feel like is a big statement for me and very brave for me to do because I'm a big Ty West fan. But I applaud. So I might go up that high. So I think it'd be around like the 50 mark for me. Right now my list is at like 200 something. I'm getting close to 300 movies.
Jeez, four times mine.
Yeah. Well, I have no life. Any free time I get, I'm like, I'm watching a movie. Like, that's what I do. But yeah, so in response to all that, I'm with you on a lot of what you said, actually. Like, I saw the machinations of the movie. I could see what it was doing. I mean, to me, it was almost... It started venturing the territory of, like, being a little too obvious with the whole Civil War thing. Mm. Like, in the beginning, I was like, okay, I immediately get what you're doing. Like, I see the symbolism here, like, the parallels you're trying to draw. And because of that, like, at one point you said, like... It all made sense. And I feel like that's the nicest thing I can say about this movie is that it made sense. Like, I understand what it's doing. I don't deny that it is a poignant way to go about things, to like, because this is what movies do. You take this big, broad, exaggerated situation, and it's meant to parallel something small that we all experience. So using this big civil war or something that was, you know, changed the course of direction for a country and everybody within it, to break that down to this small town, especially these two people who are going in different directions, like, inherently, that's poignant. But I think my big issue is that I mean, to begin with, I'm not a big Martin McDonagh fan. I don't think I've ever liked any of his movies, even in Bruges, which everyone seems to love. Like, I have never liked it. I really don't like Three Billboards. And I think part of it is just that. Like, his movies are a little bit too obvious for me and never find the real emotion. It's funny because, like, the movies are inherently honest, like they're talking about something real, yet they don't feel honest because of that. Like, they feel like obvious and playing a little bit, and like, I see what you're doing, like, I know what you're trying to make me feel, as opposed to just kind of resting in the moment with things and letting things unfold and concentrating on characters. I don't know, I feel like there's just a little bit too much of that, like, here is the big symbol for what this movie's about, as opposed to like making me feel something.
I get that. I wasn't a big, like, In Bruges or Seven Psychopaths fan. In Bruges, it was really the last, like, 10 minutes the movie clicked for me, and I was like, okay, I like this. And Seven Psychopaths was, like, okay. Mm-hmm. That was him, too, right?
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah, and then Three Billboards I liked, but I understand why it's not your kind of movie. I feel like when you can see some of the character arcs as clearly as those character arcs were, that's less interesting to you. And especially because it does feel like it's set up in such a way to really like hit on certain emotions. And I know some of that, like the machinations of that or manufacturing of that, doesn't sit quite as well with you as it might with others.
Right. Yeah. But with all that said, the great thing about Martin McDonagh is he always has awesome actors in his movie. So, like, even though I find his material a little vapid sometimes, it's acted so well and shot so pretty that, like, it's watchable. That emotional investment, that is something I really need for me to, like, be in a movie and feel something and take something away. And, like, I just never get it. So where does it rank in your list?
I put it number 9.
Oh yeah, you said all this already.
Yeah.
Well, on my all-time, let's see, on my 2022 list, I probably put it, I would say it's above, I mean, it's better than Prey. Who am I kidding? I put it right above Prey at number 31.
At 2022, where's it at? 7, I think. Yeah, it's at 7.
Okay. And on my all-time, it'd be in a, what's way down here, like 220-ish.
Okay.
Oh, God. I feel like this show is just me being mean. I don't like this.
you'll find your way.
Yeah.
This county is an amazing place, full of promise for so many people.
That's why we need a healthcare system that stretches valley-wide.
So Santa Clara Valley Medical Center, O'Connor Hospital, St. Louis Regional Hospital, and clinics across the valley have come together.
United for the public good.
Creating more access to the kind of forward-thinking healthcare everyone in our community deserves. That's the power of we. Santa Clara Valley Healthcare. Learn more at scvh.org.
That was a great dinner.
So great. Wait, where'd you park the car?
Oh, the one I just sold at Carvana.
What? When did you do that?
When you were still looking at the menu. I went on Carvana.com and all I had to do was enter the license plate or VIN, answer a few questions, and got a real offer in seconds.
They picked up the car already?
No, I parked around the corner. But they are picking it up tomorrow and paying me right on the spot.
Oh, no wonder you picked up the check.
Yeah, about that. Thought we were going halvesies.
Sell your car to Carvana. Visit Carvana.com or download the app to get a real offer in seconds.
Okay, what's another movie I want to talk about? I could talk about a new one. I mean, I could talk about Ticket to Paradise, but like, I don't think anybody's going to see that movie.
Oh, that's the George Clooney Julia Roberts movie?
I absolutely loved it.
Did you? See, aren't you like a big Mamma Mia fan too?
Yeah, but what does Mamma Mia have to do with it?
I don't know. I've never seen Mamma
Mia. Just movies where people are on an island.
Yeah.
There's no singing in Ticket to Paradise. There is dancing, though.
Okay. You know, the song of the feet.
I mean, I could talk about it really quick since we're low on time, and I can just go quick about it. Like
7 minutes.
I love Ticket to Paradise. Like, to me, you know, everyone's just rolling their eyes or like skipping to the next episode right now. Like, you don't have to trust my taste. I don't care. But I really crave a movie like this. I love old timey screwball comedies from like the 40s. And this, to me, like, this movie just uses that formula perfectly. Like, it has a very simple premise. All the characters are like caricatures, but they're done in interesting ways and acted really well and very efficiently used. Like, each of them has like a gag, like something really like obviously funny about them, but like they keep building on that idea like really well, and like they never steep too long in it. Like, they just keep moving for the next joke or to the next wacky scenario. And on top of that, like, there's such emotion infused into it. Like, you're so invested in the people and what they're fighting for and what they care about and the direction of their lives. Like, it's just all done very, very well. And on top of that, it made me cry just as much as Avatar The Way of Water did. So, like, because it's, like, that goofiness that I really appreciate about movies that I think is kind of gone. Like, a lot of movies these days, a lot of modern films, I think why I have trouble getting into them is they're so dire. Like, they're about like something going on in the world and it has to be like a social statement. Like, I like movies like that, but like I get a little sick of it, and I crave movies like this that are just like good-hearted, optimistic, hopeful, aiming for something better. It's just like, and just about the people in the movie and not necessarily about something way bigger than itself, you know? Like, I wish more movies were like this. So so on my 2022 rankings, it's high. It's it's probably number 2 or 3 for me.
Ooh. I mean, it's something that's been talked about a lot, like the death of the comedy genre. Mm-hmm. And how sad that's been making people. And it's not like we need comedies that are as gratuitous as some were in the 90s and 2000s. It's almost like it seems that as society's kind of like shifted and awareness of what is and isn't funny has shifted, people are kind of uncertain what comedies to make, and they just haven't been doing well in the box office,
right,
to justify the Hollywood attention put on them in the way that, you know, 40-Year-Old Virgin or Knocked Up, like that initial run, yeah, of Judd Apatow movies did. But I think you're starting to see so many people kind of crave not everything being like dark and brooding. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why you like the 90s Batman movies way more than recent Batman movies.
Way like, more.
You prefer Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze to... Oof. Colin Farrell as the Penguin. And not like the performances, like the movies as a whole.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Because, you know, Colin Farrell, he's great. Like, yeah, so you're totally right. And probably a big reason for that shift is like the world is such a mess. Yeah. And we're like sick of it. Like, it's nice to have something nice.
Yeah. I mean, that was something that I remember hearing a lot about, like, not as a kid. Nobody's talking about like art. Currents of art to children, but in college hearing about the idea that a lot of what trends within art is a reaction to where culture currently is and events in the world. So you'll see if events are like really bleak, a lot more escapism. If things are really positive, maybe there's a more like groundedness that comes in, or like escapism into the dark and brooding. But as the world becomes more dark and brooding, there's escapism into the positivity. And this is the first time I feel like in my life I can really start to see some of the dichotomies that have been forming, especially like pre-9/11, post-9/11, like,
yeah,
pre, like, Avatar, post-Avatar. Not that that's a tipping point, but just, like, the 2010s being such, like, a crazy decade as the digital age has really, like, taken off.
Yeah, it's going to make you feel old soon, isn't it?
Oh, hell yeah.
You saw all the shifts happen in real time, and you could tell your kids about them.
Oh, no.
All right, give us one more.
Yeah, we're going to go over, which
we'll see.
We'll figure out what to do with that.
I might cut you off and just end it.
Oh, my God. Falling Down is the other one that I watched, which is a 1993 movie, Joel Schumacher.
You know, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
It's weird because watching it, it's like a post-Die Hard movie. But for some reason, I always think of Falling Down as being earlier than Die Hard. I don't know why. But they both just kind of feel of the same period. But this is like 6 years after Die Hard has established itself, or 5 years after Die Hard's like changed the genre. Mm-hmm. So it was funny. I had watched Die Hard recently, and seeing like Falling Down in context of that was kind of interesting. But I was completely fooled by this. I imagine a lot of people were at the time, but it starts off, I had seen clips, a lot of clips over the years, but I didn't realize how subversive this film was going to be. I actually thought it was going to be like William Foster, Michael Douglas's character was going to be glorified from start to finish. And that he's kind of this everyman that's railing against these different systems and saying things about like the fast food industry or traffic or convenience store prices that people like everywhere feel. And he was doing that, but he starts to take it too far every single time. Like, are we getting ripped off by these convenience stores? Yeah, but should you trash the convenience store and like be racist to the owner? No. Is it annoying when the fast food restaurant, the big corporate fast food restaurant, has a hard cutoff of 11:30 for breakfast and you're just trying to live your life and you get there 4 minutes late and can't get this sandwich?
These complaints you have, Chris? This is not the movie.
Absolutely. Bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. Do you know, as a night owl and somebody that doesn't wake up for breakfast... Do you know how hard it is for me to get a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit from McDonald's?
That would be reason enough for me alone to stop being an insomniac.
It's frustrating. But how he goes about it, you're just like, well, this isn't good. And yet the movie's glorifying him. He's the hero that we're supposed to root for. It felt like a kind of movie that in 1993, Clint Eastwood would be like, yes.
It feels very 90s.
It feels so 90s. And I was thinking from the lens of a 2022 person who like kind of agrees with a lot of where culture has gone in terms of like, hey, don't say or do those things.
Yeah.
It was pretty awkward for a lot of it. And then I realized that's the point.
The movie wants
you to kind of be identifying with this guy in an uncomfortable way. Until the switch happens, and then you realize, oh no, he's just like a psychopath and he is the bad guy and he's terrible and you shouldn't identify with him. And the fact that there are ways in which we might identify with some of the complaints or some of the like emotions, but be horrified by the way in which he takes those things. And it now ends up as a portrait of an extremist. And the portrait of somebody who goes down the path of like extremism and terrorism and violence was such an interesting character study that as somebody that loves like Fight Club and American Psycho and defends those movies and kind of laughs at the fact that people didn't get them when they first watched them, it's the fact that I didn't get Falling Down and didn't understand that it was kind of a precursor to those movies. It just really knocked my socks off.
Man, I really should watch Falling Down. It feels like, especially if you're like a movie lover, like you're into the movie scene, like it feels like a culturally important movie. Like I've heard enough about this movie and like I feel like I've seen scenes from it. And it has the Joel Schumacher energy, which again is very 90s. Like I should probably watch it.
Yeah, I think you would like it. It's really fascinating in terms of like the twist, because it's presented as such like a 90s Hollywood blockbuster action movie, but with a little more like subversion and subtext and like actual horror. It's like Cape Fear meets Die Hard, which was like, I was not prepared for. So I'm like very on board with this movie. It's still like, it didn't rank, like I put it in my all-time rankings at number 29. It's in the positives category. I have it directly above Bullet Train because I think it's at least doing a little bit more that's interesting. Like, I think I enjoyed Bullet Train, I think, from a cinematic and like sleekness perspective a little bit more. But I think Falling Down has more to say. And it's still incredibly relevant to this day. Like, it's kind of shocking to me how much Falling Down, I think, kind of still aligns with the psychology that we see from a lot of people that are internet radicalized. That it felt like very poignant and not dated.
Nice.
But it's below Blowout, which I rewatched Blowout last year.
Awesome.
I thought it was a lot worse than I remember it being.
You're wrong.
Especially the scene where he's like trying to drive and like drives through a parade and like crashes a car.
Oh man. I love that scene.
It's insane. Like, how is it he like arrested? How is it he like,
that's what you're worried about?
Yeah. It was just so absurd. But the last 10 minutes, like the last 5 minutes of Blowout are still so good. And the commentary, the social commentary on America is still like so good.
That's part of the parade scene, Chris.
I know. I'm just kidding. But so Blowout is still like above Falling Down because I think ultimately like they're saying like similar things, but I enjoy like the aesthetic of Blowout just a little bit more.
De Palma, that guy, he can make the stupidest script in the world so watchable. So Blowout wins just whatever contest you're doing. Okay. So we've reached the end.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
About 5 minutes over.
Okay. Well, we'll use that for something at some point.
We will be punished.
We have some plans.
And obviously we didn't get to every movie we watched this week. Every movie I watched this week. I've watched 12 movies since our last podcast, so I had a lot more to talk about. And we don't have time to do it in our 30-minute allotment here. But if you go to filmcolossus.com, you can see where I ranked everything. You can see what I thought about everything. I try to do these quick write-ups about everything I watched, so go check it out there. And then before we go out, what do we want to say at the end?
I guess we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out later. Okay. Bye.
See ya. Got a big question to ask. Anything? Do you want to do anything?
We'd all love to hit skip on our problems now and again. But using weed to deal with stress as a teen won't make your issues go away. That's because THC messes with parts of the brain responsible for fear and anxiety, making it even harder to manage them on your own. So even the smaller things can start to feel difficult to handle. Learn better ways to deal with stress at mindovermarijuana.com. That's mindovermarijuana.com.
Sponsored by the California Department of Public Health.